Okay, well, looks like we have a quorum. I want to welcome everybody to the Budget Personnel and Nominating Committee meeting for the Monterey Bay Air Resources District, times 12:30, December 15th, 2021. Thanks for joining. Siri, you want to go ahead and issue the roll call?
Will do, sir. Chair McShane.
Yep.
Director Lopez.
You betcha.
Thank you. Director Carbone.
Yes.
Director Coonerty. No. Director Story is excused absence. So we do have quorum.
All right, thank you. Well, our first item is an action item, and that is to approve our continued remote meetings for the next 30 days. I don't know if we need much background on this. Rich, you wanna tee it up or?
Yes, certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. So as we've done in the past couple of months, this is to continue under the provisions provided for AB 361 to allow us to remote meet. And this lessens some of the restrictions of the Brown Act regarding teleconferencing. And we need affirmation and action from this body to make sure that we go forward. I should mention, and I will mention this to the board of directors too, I haven't really had a chance to consult less on this, but it looks like we're going to have to bridge the gap over January and have a special meeting if we wish to continue meeting through the teleconferencing under AB 361. So it may require a meeting probably to bridge the gap in January, since we usually don't have a regularly scheduled meeting. And I haven't looked at the schedule, but we may need another meeting if we can't get those 30 days to line up. So I'm just preparing you for a special meeting. I've seen that many other agencies and districts have done the same thing, just to call a special meeting to consider it, keeping AB 361 requirements in place.
Great. Any questions for Rich? Okay, seeing none, let's go to the public. Just scanning. No.
Nothing received at the office here.
Thank you. So we'll go ahead and entertain a motion if there's one.
Lopez moves staff recommendation for the appropriate AB 361 findings to continue remote meetings.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Carbone will second.
Thank you.
Okay, moved and seconded. Let's go ahead and call the roll, Siri.
All right. Director Carbone?
Yes.
Director Coonerty?
Yes.
Director Lopez?
Yes.
Chair McShane?
Yes.
And Story is absent. Passed with four.
Thank you. Our next item is the minutes from our previous meeting on November 17th. Let's see if there's any public, any questions board members might have, corrections. Not seeing anything.
Nothing was received at the office.
Okay, we'll go ahead and entertain a motion.
Carbone, so move.
Thank you.
30 seconds.
Oh, I heard Coonerty first.
All right, on the draw.
Fight at once. It's been moved and seconded. Siri, you want to call the roll?
Yes. Director Carbone?
Yes.
Director Lopez?
Yes. See, I'm slow on the unmute.
Thank you. Director Coonerty?
Yes.
Chair McShane?
Yes.
Passed with four.
Thank you. Okay, our final item are the financial statements. An independent audit report, year ended June 30th. Well, Rosa, we're ready for you if you'd like to go ahead and give a report.
Hi, good afternoon, members of the board. I was waiting for Mitesh. Siri, did you send an invite to Mitesh? Okay, he's... So this is to receive the draft financial statements and the independent audit report for the year ended June 30th, 2021. So annually, the district has an independent audit. This year, it was done by Mitesh Desai. He is with, he's a CPA and a principal of Badawi and Associates. As noted in the manager's discussion analysis section and reflected on the financial statement, the district's net position has increased by $1.3 million from the previous year. The increase is primarily due to lower grant reimbursements due to the timing of grant project completions. The combined ending fund balances was $19.4 million. It's an increase of $1.9 million from the prior year. The district's general fund had $1,046,000 in net surplus. Some of the contributing factors were due to the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. There was delays in the grant completions, primarily due to the buses not being deliverable. There was also, we had some vacancies. There was decreases in supplies, training and travel. Major factors that contributed to the changes of the fund balances are listed starting on page 7 of the manager's discussion and analysis. Other financial highlights are also included in that section. In addition to the audited 2021 statements included with this report is the attachment A, the staff prepared summary of the financial results as compared to the budget. So this is the same report that I present monthly to the board. I don't see Mitesh.
He's here.
Oh, he is?
Oh, great.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, good.
Running her internet problems.
All right. Oh, hi, Mitesh. I didn't see you. I was getting nervous. Okay, so this is, I'd like to introduce Mitesh Desai. He will be doing a presentation on the financial report, and this is a draft. So go ahead, Mitesh.
Thank you, Rosa. Let me share my screen. Right, so I think, I'm traveling at the moment, so I have, I don't have a spare monitor, so I'm just sharing my presentation in PDF format. So hopefully that's, you can see that fine. But we've completed the audit for the district, and wanted to go over a few items. So we wanted to go over our agenda, our engagement team, the deliverables, the scope of our audit area. So we've emphasized on the audit report results, going over the financial statements, our required communications that we need to make to the committee. Briefly go over new accounting standards coming the district's way in the upcoming years. And then I'll leave some time for questions or if you want any items to discuss. So going over our engagement team. So I was the partner on the audit and I had one staff assisting me remotely on various testing that we were doing. His name is Tim. And then outside of the engagement team, we have a quality control reviewer who is Ahmed. And he's not necessarily part of our engagement team, so to speak. He's more, I guess, supposed to be an independent party who looks at our report and makes sure that it looks fine. We do this extra step of review whenever we are assisting a client with preparing the financial statements. So in terms of deliverables, so with that packet, with that report, really our piece as the auditors is only the first two pages, which is our auditor's report, where we opine on those financial statements. And then we also usually publish a letter, which is a bit redundant. It's not completely necessary because we do communicate with the board through this presentation, but it's more of a formality that we'll publish that letter. In terms of areas of primary audit emphasis, so our audit is done on a risk-based approach where we don't necessarily look at everything on an equal, as equal, I guess, in terms of risk, and we don't perform all audit procedures on all accounts in equality. The risk-based auditing standards were created to, I guess, enable a more cost-efficient audit where we're you know, focusing on areas that are more material to the financial statements and also may have more likely misstatement risk. So those, the first risk that we identified, and this is not really anything specific to the district. Usually this first risk of improper revenue recognition is, if we don't identify it as a risk, we have to explain in our audit why we didn't identify it as a risk, because it's just inherently applicable to all entities usually. And we address this risk by performing tests of license permits. And then we also do obtain a reconciliation of the DMV surcharges that are collected. We review the allowance for uncollectible accounts. And then we also review unearned grant revenues and grant revenue reconciliations. Pension and other post-employment benefit liabilities and amounts in the financial statements are complex. And I guess it's been a few years now, so it's, I think everyone may not be as, I think now it's a bit more routine as to how to report those amounts. However, there are a lot of various pieces that need to go into evaluating those amounts. So we'll obtain actuary reports from CalPERS and the district's OPEB actuary. We review audit opinions that are issued by CalPERS auditors. We test data that's submitted to CalPERS, and we look at the journal entries and the amounts that are recorded. Going over our auditor's report or the results of the audits, so we'll be issuing a unmodified opinion, which is referred to as a clean opinion. What that means is that the financial statements are fairly presented in all material respects. Significant accounting policies have been consistently applied. The estimates in the financial statements are reasonable, and disclosures that accompany those financial statements are accurate and complete. Just going over the financial statements over the past 3 years. So this is a schedule of the district's assets and deferred outflows of resources. Deferred outflows of resources are just timing differences, mainly things that are not allowed to be recognized in as expense or income immediately. So they are deferred and recognized over a period of time. But with regards to assets, you can see that there's no significant changes here. With regards to 2021, you did have an increase in your cash balances just due to just your revenues exceeding how much was paid out. Otherwise, you had a decrease in your capital assets, which was just the depreciation expense that is recognized every year. And there were no new acquisitions of capital assets this year, so you had a net decrease. With regards to liabilities and deferred inflows, you can see that probably other liabilities had a big swing. There was an increase last year, and then this year there was a decrease. That's mainly related to the district's unearned revenues. And the unearned revenues are mainly unearned grant revenues, where the district receives various grants for various programs. And the district receives those monies up front rather than receiving them as a reimbursement or over a period of time. So the accounting rules don't allow for those revenues to be recognized immediately, because technically you have not earned them until you've kind of complied with the grant requirements and spent it for whatever it's meant to be used for. So in 2020, the amounts were received, and some amounts were spent this year. So there was a decrease in those unearned revenues because you recognize them as revenues. Long-term liabilities. Last year, the district received a updated valuation for OPEB. Mainly, there was a big decrease because there were some changes in the assumptions and experience studies evaluated by the actuary. So that dropped from 2020 to 2021. There was any significant changes in the methods or assumptions taken. So no significant change there. And with regards to the net pension liability increase, The way the net pension liability is reported when employers participate in a cost sharing plan, which the district participates in Perf C in CalPERS, you don't get necessarily a separate valuation report or net pension liability calculation where the actuary determines how much specifically for the district needs to be paid out and how much monies are set aside for the district. The way your net pension liability is calculated is the actuary calculates a liability for everyone in the plan. So everyone who's participating in Perf C, City of Susanville, City of Sebastopol, City of Kalamasa, other districts, small districts, the actuary calculates in total what is their projected liability and also looks at everyone's assets in accumulation and derives a net pension liability for the whole plan. Also, they'll provide you an allocation schedule. The allocation schedule can be based on a number of things. Could be based on contributions, could be based on previous year's funding valuations, and you calculate your share of the plan. So you would multiply your percentage times the total, and you recognize this as your net pension liability or your share of the net pension liability. With that, there was an increase this year because overall the total plan had an increase in the net pension liability. So similarly, your share of that total increased. These are estimates, so it's nothing to be alarmed with that it's going up or not. Looking at slide number 12, so this is the district's net position, which is another way of saying equity. So equity is classified into three components on the financial statements. You have net investment in capital assets, restricted, and unrestricted. Net investment in capital assets is, if you look at your, similar to your equity in your house, where you have your house, which is an asset, and you may have taken out a mortgage. So the difference between the value of your house and your debt is your net investment or your equity in your property. So that's what this is. This is just the district's capital assets less any debt, which I believe there is no debt. So this is just the district's capital assets. Restricted are any amounts that are externally restricted, meaning that the board doesn't have discretion into how those monies can be spent. They have to be spent for a specific purpose within the district's operations. So that's what's restricted. And then you have unrestricted, which is amounts that the board have flexibility in using for, you know, any program that it offers. And you can see that the unrestricted is in a deficit position. And it is something that I guess is challenging to understand or to see or to get better meaning of that number, because in the past, unrestricted would be positive and it would reflect how much monies are flexible to be spent or how much amounts are, you know, in terms of how much money you have to be. You have, so it would usually be interpreted as something bad when you have a negative unrestricted net position, that you may be in a financial situation. However, this unrestricted net position is negative because of these, because mainly of the district's net pension liability here, which is 8.7 million. So if you think about it, your net pension liability doesn't need to be paid off tomorrow, or doesn't need to be paid off 2 years from now. It's something that you're going to be paying over the next 30 years, as long as the district is still offering this plan. So if you remove that liability from this 1.3 million, then you'd see that actually you do have a good amount of monies available that you have in flexibility in spending. So it's unfortunately with implementation of the GASB 75 and 68, you do end up with this number that's maybe not as meaningful as maybe it was in the past, but it's still, I guess, something to look at and adjust as needed for interpretation. On slide number 13, here we have the district's change in net position over the past 3 years. So maybe something, maybe in the future, maybe it's something to look at maybe over a longer period than 3 years, because I think, and maybe looking at an average, because I believe the variances each year, and I think even in the past, are mainly because of some of the grant programs that the district offers and pays out. So usually those amounts are not consistently paid out, because I believe there are timing as to applications and also making sure accumulation of funds before you pay out, give out these grants. So it's always that 1 year you have a large payment of these grants, and the next year there's none, and then the following year there's a large payment of grants. So maybe in the future, it's something maybe I'll look at it to get a better meaning of this, because it's really hard to see just over 3 years whether things are going bad or good. Because usually this type of swing would be, you know, a bit abnormal. But looking at slide number 14, this is just the district's expense coverage. So this is something that we're looking at the general fund and not on the government-wide financial statements. So this is looking at a different accounting basis, which we're looking at things in a bit more of a meaningful way. Not necessarily a meaningful way. Both are meaningful. The purpose is different. But at least for budgeting purposes, this is a bit more, or more immediate needs, this is a bit more meaningful. So this is looking at the general fund's unrestricted fund balance, which includes all monies that the general fund has that can be used for any purpose, not necessarily limited to anything specifically, and comparing that to the total general fund's expenditures to just get an idea of how many months of operations would the district be able to operate if they didn't receive any more revenues. So the GFOA recommends no less than 2 to 4 months, and the district has 7 to 8 months of unrestricted fund balance, which is a healthy position to be in. Slide number 16, this is something that's consistent. I've done a few presentations over the past week or so for a number of our clients and updating the slide, and everyone seems to have it almost the same rate, and that's not necessarily by accident, that it's a gradual increase every year. CalPERS do some smoothing on the contribution requirements for all agencies, so to prevent, I guess, for ease of budgeting, and also that you're not surprised with a big jump 1 year that you have an immediate demand for a large contribution. So gains and losses are amortized and smoothed over a long period of time. So there's a gradual increase. I believe this year or last year, CalPERS had a big gain in their investment. So you'd see something, I'm guessing that you'll probably still see an increase next year because these are all amortized. So the whole impact of that gain is not going to be picked up right away. But you should probably see an ease of the increase in the future, at least temporarily. So one thing I didn't mention with regards to the net pension liability figure that's on the government-wide financial statements is that it's an estimate. And the way the actuaries estimate this number is that they, project based on who's currently retired and also who's currently working for the district and eligible for benefits, how much will the district be paying based on, you know, based on current information, how much will you be paying in the future every year? And what they'll do is then take those future payments and then discount them to a measurement date. So they will adjust all those future payments to current year dollars and adjust for interest earnings and report a measurement amount as of today. And that really is I guess, how do you say, it really depends, the results really depend on the discount rate that is used. So currently a discount rate of 7.15% is used to discount those future payments to a current measurement liability, and you end up with the result of 8.8 million in approximate. But you can see that, you know, had a different discount rate been used of 6.15% or 8.15%, your liability would have been, could have been, you know, recorded as 13.5 million or 4.8 million. So this is a required disclosure that accompanies the financial statements in the pension note. However, it's not meant to be this is what the number should have been, or this is the other number that it should have been. It's just to give you a range of, or an idea of what the number could be. And, you know, for your budgeting purposes or for your decision purposes, you could, you have that information available if you want to, you know, have, you know, the number was recorded as 8.8 million, but if you wanted to be a bit more conservative, you could look at your balance sheet and update the numbers and evaluate things, you know, using the lower discount rate and the higher net pension liability estimate. Or if you wanted to be a bit more optimistic that, you know, things seem to be trending in the opposite direction, you could think, well, yeah, it's recorded as 4.8, but maybe we'll only end up paying 4.8. So that's just to give you an idea of that. So, but this is included in the notes in your pension section. This is the district's annual OPEB contributions or other post-retiree health contributions. And the OPEB contributions are really made up of two things. Firstly, you have your contribution that you make to the trust, which I believe the district contributed 70,000. I might be confusing that with another agency, but usually I know that the district has been contributing consistently. And it also includes any retiree health premiums that you've paid outside of the trust. So if you paid out of the general fund a certain amount of retiree health premiums, those are also considered to be a contribution because they were not paid out of the trust. They were paid out of, outside of the trust. So you can see it's been going down. And unlike a pension, there is no contractual obligation to fund these liabilities. So it's purely a policy decision of how much you want to fund and whether you actually do want to fund it. So it's, you're doing, I think what's the best practice right now is to actually fund these liabilities, which is a good thing. And the reason I think for the decrease that you're seeing here is that the liability is smaller. So after the remeasurement that was done in 2020, the liability is smaller. So likewise, the funding requirements are smaller because you don't need to contribute as much to fund those liabilities. So as you fund, as you continue to fund, and if you keep funding more than the required amount, then your future contributions will go down as the plan becomes more fully funded. This is just the funded status. So you'll see that there was that big swing here. So looking at the assets, you'll see that they've been growing. And if we included 2021, you'll see that I believe there was another increase in your assets or your fiduciary net position of the OPEB plan. So that's been going up. And then in 2020, in as of June 30, 2019, you have that decrease here in your actuarial liability. And that's what's causing that significant drop. And I believe that drop was mainly a result of the excise tax, but I think there was also another component to it. But either way, I think that's fine. Similarly with pension, we have a sensitivity disclosure for OPEB liabilities. So we look at the discount rate, and again, it gives you a range of what your liability could have been. You see, maybe it's not as a drastic of a difference here compared to pension, just because your pension, your pensioners are getting paid a significant amount every year compared to relative to your retiree health premium. Your retiree health premiums are a fraction of what is paid in in terms of someone who's getting a full benefit payment from CalPERS. So when you discount those future cash flows, you're not looking at the same dollar amount. So the swing isn't as great here. In addition to the discount rate, another assumption that's unique to your retiree health premium liability is the actuary's assumption as to how much healthcare costs will increase in the future. So healthcare costs will increase in the future, but how quickly will they increase? So the actuary assumed an increase of 4% to 6.5%. So I think they initially assumed that things will go up very significantly, and then gradually in the following years, the increases won't be as significant. But at the end of the day, that's an assumption that's built based on past trends, but an assumption. But had they used a different rate that was 1% lower or 1% higher, you would have come up with a different result. So had the assumption been that healthcare costs would have grown more gradually, then you would have a liability of $172,000. Had they assumed that things would go up more rapidly, then you would have a higher liability. But again, it's just a range, just to give you that information. So lastly, you want to go over our required communications here that we need to present. So, you know, it gets a bit murky sometimes, especially when we assist management with preparing the financial statements. And there can be so many interpretations as to what's expected of the auditor. So it's just a clarification of our responsibilities as the auditor. So that is that we express an opinion on the financial statements. So we perform procedures, look at supporting documentation, and we give an opinion on those numbers. With that, we also evaluate internal controls or financial reporting for any material weaknesses or significant deficiencies, evaluate compliance with laws and regulations, evaluate the tone at the top, ensure the financial statements are clear and transparent, and also to communicate the results of the audit to the governing body. Management are responsible for everything else. So they are actually the ones, even though we assist in preparing the financial statements, they take ownership of it at the end of the day. So they review it and verify that the numbers are correct. There's no missing information in the notes that needs to be disclosed. And they're also responsible for establishing internal controls. So we may evaluate them as part of our audit. However, designing them and putting them in place is management's responsibility. Making available all information to us for the audit, adjusting financial statements, informing us of any instances of fraud, complying with laws and regulations, taking corrective action on audit findings, that would be management's responsibility. Our responsibility also includes independence. So this is why your stakeholders, they request an audit, or the state requires an audit to be performed by someone external from the district. So you can't have someone from management come in and start doing exactly what we're doing and issue a report, because at the end of the day, you're looking for, or the stakeholders are looking for, an independent opinion that's free of bias and such. So our responsibility as the auditors are to maintain that independence, because it's probably the most important thing as part of our audit. If we violate our independence, then really we're not in a position to issue an opinion. We would have to withdraw. So we comply with the rules set by the AICPA and the Board of Accountancy. So violations, or I wouldn't say violations, it's probably too harsh of a word, but conflicts would be, for example, if I had worked for the district during a period of the time that we're auditing, that would be an independence issue. If we did bookkeeping services, if we prepared journal entries that were not approved by management and just posted them without management's approval, those would be areas that we wouldn't be able to perform the audit or issue an opinion, because we are, at the end of the day, would be opining on our own work in a sense. So we So that's our responsibility. Timing, we were performing the audit in accordance with the engagement letter. In terms of new accounting pronouncements, so these are the four pronouncements that were implemented during the year. 84 discusses fiduciary activities. 90, 93, and 97 didn't really have an impact on the financial statements, so nothing. But 84, there was some clarification that was issued with the guidance with 84 on reporting of the plan of your agent multiple employer plan, OPEP plan. So there was no, we didn't include the OPEP trust as part of the district's financial statements this year. And the OPEP trust was considered outside of the district's control, so to speak. So that's not necessarily a district asset. It's still included as part of your OPEP liability. So it's still essentially, I guess, part of your financial statements, but it's not reported as a separate component as a fiduciary activity, because essentially the district is not the one holding the money. It's for the participants. It's being held by PARS. So it's a bit of a confusing or a bit of a gray area, and it's something that was confused. It misinterpreted in the past, so it was clarified, and we've removed that OPEP trust from the financials. In terms of estimates, other than pension and OPEP, you also have your allowance for uncollectible accounts, so your estimates of how much are you going to collect from what's currently billed, and then also the useful lives of capital assets. That's used to determine depreciation expense. You're supposed to depreciate your capital assets based on their usefulness or number of years of usefulness. So it shouldn't be that an asset that you're using for 20 years gets depreciated over 5 years or the opposite. You're expected that it's an asset becomes fully depreciated approximately when, you know, you're ready to sell it or abandon it. So that's another estimate that we evaluate. In terms of the disclosures, the disclosures are quite lengthy. This is just a few of the disclosures that are the most critical. And that would be a summary of significant accounting policies. So this is all the district's policies of how they account for different things, all the different accounts, what type of basis they use and accounting policies they use. Cash and investments gives you some information about investment policies, composition of the district's cash and investment accounts, and some other information. It's probably not as lengthy as it could be with other agencies that have more elaborate investments. So the district's investments are quite straightforward, but still a critical note. And then capital assets will similarly tell you the composition of the capital assets, the activities during the year. Your retirement plan and OPEP plan disclosures will tell you about what benefits are currently being offered by the district, what were the assumptions taken by the actuary in deriving their estimates. So those are important notes. We didn't have any difficulties in performing the audit. We didn't have any material audit adjustments, and no risks or exposures were identified. We didn't have any disagreements with management. No material weaknesses were identified in our audit. So when you finalize the audit, we'll obtain a representation letter from management. And a representation letter just discloses, it's just management taking responsibility for whatever was provided to us, that it was accurate, complete, and valid information. And we're not aware of any consultations with other accountants that management may have done. And no other significant material written communications. We have no material uncertainties relating to events and conditions. What that means is whether we believe that the district will be in operations in the future. We do an assessment of all clients. We're required to do an assessment, and if you had concern that your financial condition was really bad, that you wouldn't be in operation in the future, or there's doubt that you'd be in operation in the future, then we would have to disclose that, which we are have a healthy balance. So there's no issues there. We're not aware of any instances of fraud or illegal acts. There was one, an internal matter. I guess it was external relating to the attack on the district, but other than that, the phishing attack, but otherwise we're not aware of anything. In terms of new accounting standards, so these are the accounting standards coming the district's way. So probably nothing that really significantly impacts the financial statements. The first, there is just one that impacts almost everybody, is statement 87, which talks about the accounting of leases. And I believe the district have a few leases that you're both the lessee and you also lease office space. So you would have to do some change in accounting of that transaction. However, I don't think it's that significant or lengthy list of leases, but that's something that's to be evaluated. Hopefully it's something that's probably something you want to start early, just because there may be agreements that are not labeled as leases that really operate as a lease. Other than that, if you have any subscription-based IT arrangements, which I believe the district has, there is some accounting requirements for how to record that in 2023 that needs to be identified. Otherwise, I want to thank you for allowing us to perform the audit for the district. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Great job, Mitesh. Very helpful and very informative. It's not something I'm always thinking about, public accounting and auditing. So thank you. And you had to bring up the phishing attack. Any questions at this time, Ryan or Chris, Marianne, any questions from Mitesh? I mean, this is coming up. We'll have another chance to take a bite at the apple. Maybe one quick thing I would say, Mitesh, is it correct to say there's an inverse relationship between how much we're contributing to our pension and how much PERS, say, is taking in? I mean, normalized over time. Is that kind of the idea?
You mean whether the amount that you're contributing is what they've received?
Right. Like if CalPERS does great, like if their return is 40%, then the district isn't hit as hard, right?
Yeah. Theoretically, that's how it's supposed to work. Is that their gains and losses would impact how much you need to contribute. Essentially, if they are making a lot of monies from their investments, they should be requesting less monies from the employers.
Right.
But I think there are a lot of things in place because they also have their policies. They don't necessarily hit the district immediately with gains and losses. So they amortize it over a long period of time. And then they also adjust their policy of how they want to do that every so often. So I recall being in a conference one time and there was a CalPERS. I think this was back in 2010 with the housing market crash where there were some there were some big increases in the contribution rates because the investments were being impacted. And I think he was trying to explain that when times are good, employers have more money to pay. So they'll kind of adjust their contribution requirements to obtain more money from the employers. At the same time, when there are bad times, the investments are not doing well. So they also need to gather more money from the employers. So it's hard to say. I would expect that you'd still see an increase, but maybe not as big of an increase in the future, at least for the time being.
Yeah. Yeah, well, again, great job. Let's see. I'm just looking to other directors to see if there's any questions. I don't see any. This is not an action item, right? We just accept the report maybe that's a question for Les or Rich. Should we take a vote to accept or do we just accept?
I recommend you vote to recommend approval to the full board.
Okay. Thank you, Les, for that clarification. Okay. So is there a motion to recommend approval of the draft financial statements and independent audit report for the year ending June 30th, 2021?
So moved, Coonerty.
All right. Is there a second?
I will second, Kurt Bone.
Thank you. Okay, Siri, you want to go ahead and call the roll?
Will do. Chair McShane.
Yep.
Director Lopez.
Yes.
Director Coonerty.
Yes.
Director Carbone.
Yes.
Approved unanimously at 4.
Okay, well, we'll see everybody at 1:30, including Mitesh, I hope. Thank you for taking the time. We'll go ahead and stand adjourned for the Budget Personnel and Nominating Committee in Monterey Bay Resources District. Thank you very much. See you shortly.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.